It doesn't take very much to indoctrinate young people and turn them against their own families.
Yeah.
Children are being brainwashed.
Mm-hmm.
Right? They're being indoctrinated, being brainwashed.
Which is true.
Yeah. However, what we want to focus on equally as much, if not more, is the idea that parents are brainwashed first. Black Lives Matter was your glimpse of what they want to turn the whole country into. It's revolutionist. They're going to go through the education system, just like Mao did, and separate the child from their families using sex and race. And they'll create revolutionists. And the entire country will be blanketed by what we saw in the summer of Black Lives Matter burning the city down. To tear down America from within. That's a Marxist, it's a Marxist takeover of America to turn to destroy our republic.
Hi, everyone. I'm Dr. Jennifer Roback Morse, founder and president of the Ruth Institute. My guest today on today's episode of the Dr. J Show is Alvin Louie, who has some very helpful information to you if you are concerned about what is going on in your child's school. Mr. Louie has some valuable information that will allow you to take proactive steps to do something about what's going on in your school, whether it's on gender ideology, other forms of toxic sexual ideology, social and emotional learning, so-called, and all of the other crazy things that are coming down the pike. So if you're concerned or if you know somebody who's concerned, you're really going to want to watch this episode, take notes, and get ready to click on some of these great resources that Alvin Louie has prepared for you. Alvin, welcome to the Dr. J Show. I'm so happy to
Thank
talk to you.
Thank you so much. I'm so happy to be here. I know that we've talked a little bit and I've been looking forward to this. So thank you for having me. It's an honor.
Great. And in between the time I booked you to be on this show and the time we're actually recording it, I saw you on Epic TV. So congratulations for that.
Thank you. Those are good people.
Those are our kind of people, though their main focus is not the same as ours, but we're definitely soulmates, I would say.
They were great. They were a wonderful, wonderful team. Jan and his team was great.
Great. I'm sure it was. And I would encourage people to go watch that video, by the way. But anyway, stay here and watch this video, the Dr. J Show.
Watch this one first.
So, Alvin, you founded an organization called Courage is a Habit. Tell us a little bit about the organization and the goals of the organization.
Be happy to. So the mission is very simple. We stay in our lane. We make tools and resources and strategies for the average parent, legislators, grandparents, citizens that are concerned about the indoctrinations that's happening in K through 12. The programs that are coming in, which we'll talk about in this show here, it's confusing and it's complicated on purpose. And so we make these tools. Some of it is technical. Some of it is strategy. Some of it is mindset, how to work around gaslighting, how to work around goalposts moving, emotional blackmail, which is a lot of the teachers and counselors are doing to parents. So some of it is that. But the point of it is making it for the average parent that don't have 50 hours a week to dig into all this and make heads and tails out of it. It's not meant for people who are like maybe you and I who are in the space a lot. It's meant for the average parent that they work. Maybe it is a stay-at-home mom, but she's got kids she's got to take care of and a house to maintain and all the other things that life throws at us. And it's broken down into consumable, easy to understand material. But more importantly, at the end of our material, there's always a call to action so that we show parents and we suggest to parents what to do on any particular topic.
Well, I'll tell you, you're singing our song there because we have plenty of people who are, you know, very smart and figuring things out and writing treatises and so on. But we need something that people can use in the actual, you know, kind of hand-to-hand combat, you could say, of dealing with these issues. So the title of your organization is interesting. Why did you call it Courage as a Habit? What do you mean by Courage as a Habit?
So I'll tell you how the name came about. So as I go to speak with parent groups previously before the organization was launched, I would always kind of end my speech with this. Don't you find it funny that you, intelligent, successful people, have to come to an event either at night or on the weekend to come listen to a stranger tell you to defend your child? Every parent knows how to defend their child. Parents have been doing it since eons. They've crossed oceans and deserts just to have a shot at their children having a better life. And I would say, I'll prove it to you right now that you know how to defend your child. If your child or grandchild was in a burning building and they were screaming for you, there is nobody on this planet, no matter what they do or what they say, would keep you from running into that building and saving your child or grandchild. I would say for grandparents, even more so, because nobody loves to be as much as grandparents love their grandkids, right? So you would do that. Even if it meant risking your life, you would happily do it. You wouldn't think about it. But if someone points a finger at your face and calls you a bigot or a transphobe, now all of a sudden you can't defend your child. Why is that? Because you've made fear a habit. Over the years, you've been silent on things that you shouldn't have been silent about, but you go along to get along and you're a kind person. So at work, with your friends, outside, whatever it is, you just stop saying what you really felt. Now they're coming after your kids and you've made fear a habit. But the good news is courage is also a habit. Every time you want to say something and you don't, and your heart's coming out of your chest and you say it anyway, and you take a couple of arrows, maybe the arrows were as bad as you thought. Most of the time it's not as bad as you thought. It becomes a habit. Then on the sixth and seventh and 10th time when you do it, it's just not as hard anymore. It's as hard the first couple of times. So that's something that I would say when I'm speaking to parents. And so when we're looking at an organization, not on a local level, but on a national level, I wanted a name for an organization that every time you say it, you're giving a positive message, even though you don't know it. Mm-hmm. So even my opponents, who we call child mutilation advocates or groomers, we call them child mutilation advocates. It's a little more appropriate, a little bit more succinct. Even when they say our name, they're giving a message.
That's right. They're spelling they're giving out your message every time they say your name. And they've been doing that kind of thing to us too. You know, when sure. we use their names are carefully calculated to be mm-hmm. irresistible. Right. And so it's a very important strategy that you've got there. So, and it's also vaguely Aristotelian, you know, because Aristotle talks about virtues as simply habits, you know,
that's right.
Bit of behavior.
That's the thing for the name.
Right. And courage and fortitude are certainly among the cardinal virtues for sure. So tell us, what prompted you to found courage as a habit? Was there something in your background that encouraged you along this line? Was there some particular incident that pushed you over mm-hmm. the edge? Or, you know, what is it about Alvin Louie that said, I need to do this?
Actually, nothing. It shouldn't be anything. I'm wholly unqualified to do any of this, to be honest with you. I really am. So I will say, though, that I think the people who are in charge of education and to guard our freedoms have solely failed us, because otherwise we wouldn't be in this position. Because honestly speaking, someone like myself and anybody else in this space should not be in this space. We're in it because we're in dire straits.
Right.
So my family and I, so I was born in California, raised in California mostly. And I moved my young family from California to Indiana in April 2020. And I've said this many, many times. I didn't want to fight anymore. California was so lost, but I didn't know it at the time. Just like everybody else, we were blind to a lot of the things that were happening. We were many of the horrible things that you see around the country started in California first.
Right.
So we were the first of almost everything that's very, very heavily radical and left-wing in this country started in California. And we didn't know. And so by the time I realized what was happening and trying to fight, I started to understand that all of it started in academia and then later on K-12. And so the battle is, we've lost that battle long ago. We just didn't know it. So moving to the Midwest was wonderful. We love being in the Midwest in Indiana, and people couldn't be nicer. But when I got here, I started to see a lot of the same seeds that had already been planted that ruined my old home. And so at that moment, I realized that there's really nowhere to run. There's nowhere for anybody's children, my children, your children, grandchildren. There's nowhere else for anybody to go if the same things that's happening in California has spread. Now, in my family, this is unfortunately a story that we know well, because my great-grandfather, when he was an older man, had to run from communism. You know, Dr. Morse, because education is so, it's so dumbed down, a lot of young people don't know that communism wasn't always in China. That came not that long ago in the scheme of history. And so when my grandfather came to this country, he was an older man and he had to go to a brand new country, didn't know the language, again, just to give that shot for his family to have a better life. And I didn't cover this part on the American thought leaders, but you know, my great grandfather, when he came here, he died by himself. He never saw his son or grandson, which is my dad. He never saw them come to America, because America has one of the most generous chain immigration in the whole world. And so at the time when he got here, but you know, it takes time, and he died by himself. He died not knowing if his family ever made it or they were just trapped in communism. He never knew
So,
that.
what year did your great grandfather come to the US, and what year did the rest of your family start coming over?
I can't remember exactly what year, but my dad got here in late 1960s.
I see. Okay. So, Cultural Revolution time.
The Red
Is that right?
Guard.
Am I holding
Yep,
that right?
Miles Red Guard, which is the equivalent of today's Antifa, Black Lives Matter, LGBTQ. That's today, that's our Red Guard. The diversity, inclusion, equity officers, they had those two.
And they had struggle sessions
Struggle sessions, yep.
where you had to confess your guilt and all of that kind of thing.
Today they call them courageous conversations. Same thing.
There was a movie some years ago. What was it called? It was about the Khmer Rouge. And it was the same sort of, it was The Killing Fields. That's what it was
Yeah,
called. The
right,
Killing
right.
Fields. And one of the most chilling things in that film is that the people who were going around murdering people and putting blue plastic bags on their head and stuff were high school students, junior
Always.
high school students who had
That's right.
been fully indoctrinated into the radicalism, right? And so your
Same thing
family,
here.
yes, and so your family, you're not going to be talked out of this, Alvin, right? I mean, your family has it in their bloodstream,
It's
and
in
you're
our
part of
blood.
that
It's in
history.
our, yeah, it's unfortunately in our legacy, in our family, that it doesn't take very much to indoctrinate young people and turn them against their own families. And so when I got to
And that it's
Indiana, I
so and that
realized,
it's so easy to tear down
oh, it's
compared
so
to
easy.
building up. Yeah,
Oh,
yeah,
it's
yeah.
so easy. One
Yeah.
generation is one or two generations all it takes.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And so when I saw it here, I realized I had to triple down and do something. Otherwise, you know, my great grandfather came here for absolutely nothing. If my daughter's going to live on her knees, or my children are going to live on their knees, or my son's going to live on their knees, it doesn't matter. And so, you know, I had a small nonprofit here in Indiana. We did good work. You know, volunteers were fantastic. And we, you know, we really woke the neighborhood up here, right? The small little town. It was local. I just, you know, I had only intention of just caring about my town that I was living in. I live in a very nice suburbs, you know, because I didn't want the same thing happening in here that I saw in California. But as I saw it exploding in everywhere else, I knew that just fighting on a local level isn't enough. And that I had something of value, I think, to parents to help them fight. Because my natural inclination is to always stay on offense. And I know that's not the case for a lot of parents. And that's what's hurting them. That's what happened to a lot of people. So I wanted to create an organization that where I wasn't fighting for them, because I went in my local nonprofit here in Indiana, I was doing a lot of the fighting. Which is fine because that's my natural inclination. But I realized that that's not going to win anything if I'm the one doing the fighting. What I needed to do was teach people how to fight.
No matter how good you are individually,
Doesn't
it's
matter.
not going to be enough, right?
Nope.
And you know, I had the exact same feeling when I founded the Ruth Institute, you know, because I could see I knew some things that needed to be shared. But no matter how good I am, no matter how famous I am, no matter how many books I write, it's not going to be enough. You got to get more
No.
troops in the field, you know, there got to be other people. So you're singing my song, you know,
Right.
and I'll tell you too, we left California. We lived in San Diego until 2015, and we came to Louisiana, which is culturally as far away as you can get from, you know, from California. And San Diego was one of the nicer parts of, you know,
Sure.
one of the least radical
That's true.
cities.
Yes, that's right. Yeah.
But it was always our thought that we were not retreating. It was a strategic retreat so that we could be someplace safe where you could get something done,
That's
right?
right.
Because, right. And so that's what you're doing from Indiana. And that's what a lot of us are doing from the internet, insofar as we can. So tell us some of the tools that you and your organization have developed to help parents deal with some of these issues.
So I'm going to start with some of the psychological stuff first, and then we can work our way
Okay.
to the technical stuff and things that
Okay.
parents can
Okay.
physically actually do. So it is very common, and it's still true. It's not that it's not true, but it's very common for people in my space to focus on the idea that children are being brainwashed, right? They're being indoctrinated to being brainwashed, which is
Right.
true.
A lot of people see that.
A
They
lot of
know
people
that
see
it's true
that.
about
It's
you.
true. Yeah.
Yeah.
However, what we want to focus on equally as much, if not more, is the idea that parents are brainwashed first. Because if you didn't brainwash parents, we wouldn't be in this position because, like I said earlier, every parent knows how to defend their child. My great grandfather did not have to go to a seminar for someone to tell him, you have to literally pick up and move to a different country so that your children and grandchildren have a shot at a better life, right? Because we all know how to do it. So, like I said earlier about fear being a habit, how do I get parents to not be brainwashed? So we teach them things like, what's a social contagion? How does that work for you? So, for example, we wrote this really basic comic called Be Like Bill. Okay. And you can
Oh.
find it on courageisahabit.org. Now, this might seem kind of a silly thing, but when you go to courageisahabit.org under I think it's under strategies, it's download Be Like Bill, and it's called The Anatomy of a Social Contagion. And we remind parents how they weaponize your kindness against you. The crux, there's two powers that be, there's two core powers for the people that are pushing this to children. Number one is that they're weaponizing your kindness. They tell you words like inclusion, diversity. Don't you want kids to feel included? It's just about tolerance. It's just about acceptance. They say these things because they know most people are kind. And so they tell parents how unkind they are, all the while taking advantage of their kindness. If
Right.
parents don't understand that very basic but very devious concept that's happening to them, it really won't matter what tools we give them because their own brainwashing, their own weaponizing of kindness will end up having them not use my tools properly. I will give you a scenario, okay? So let's say we create an opt-out form, which we have, and I'll talk about that. Let's say
Yeah,
we have an
I'm
opt-out.
very excited about your opt-out form.
Yeah,
It's
and
on this resource here.
there
Data
you go. That's
mining. Data
it. That's
mining.
exactly right.
Okay, come on.
That's
Yeah.
right. And
So,
we have others as well, but that's one of the bigger ones. And
right.
so let's say a parent goes in and says, "Hey, I'm going to try out this opt-out form. I don't want my students to engage with social workers and school counselors," which we'll definitely talk about that. Or SEL surveys, which is what you had in your hand. Let's say they do that. And then the principal or superintendent or school counselor says, "Well, what's the matter? You don't want your children to learn about empathy and inclusion? You want your children to be your are you bigots? Do you not want children to feel seen and heard and included?" And parents, if they don't understand what I just said about being weaponizing kindness and how to spread a social contagion, they're going to go, "Well, no, that's not what I meant. That's not what we mean. We just think, well, okay, well, maybe we just won't turn out this opt-out form, but I just want to be sure we don't, I don't want this, happen to our kids. Oh, it's not happening. It's not happening. Don't worry about it." And then the parents go home and then they continue on. So if parents don't understand that this is a very deliberate way to brainwash them first, to get them to be silent so that they can go after the children, it won't work. And you can download Be Like Bill. Another thing that you can download is right next to Be Like Bill is the Child Mutilation Advocate Strategy. And then below that is the Groomer Playbook. Okay. The Groomer Playbook. So those are strategies because they're not necessarily tools because you're not actually using it externally. This is for you, the parent, to understand what's happening to you. Okay. So that's really important. Those three things I just mentioned, if you download those, it will help you understand when they weaponize your kindness against you. And then the last thing, and then we'll move on to some of the more technical tools, is if you go back to the homepage at courageisahabit.org, you will see right off the top there a little button that says printable flyers. Okay. And these flyers, you know, some of them, it's just you can print it out for school board, or if you go to an event, more for marketing for us. But there is on the in that flyer folder, there is something called weaponizing kindness. And you know, Dr. Morris, you know this probably better than anybody else. Sometimes a picture speaks a thousand words, and we're visual learners. And so there's an item that we put up there. We just created it in January called Weaponizing Kindness. And it's a visual for the way they weaponize your kindness. And so those are the things I want parents to kind of have, and then they can share with other parents and then have a conversation. Because if parents don't get their own brainwashing in check, they can't stand up for their children. And so that's why that is such an important goal of ours, especially here in early 2023.
Yes, yes. And you know, there are a couple of things going on. One is the way they redefine terms. And this is something we talk about all the time at the Ruth Institute, you know, that they'll take a term that you think they mean something very different when they use that word. And they use the same word. They scoop out all the meaning and put in the meaning that they want. And now they're completely in control of the dialogue, right? Because it's a word with a lot of good vibes, you know, and who can be against empathy, who can be against inclusion, who wants to, you know, so on and so forth. And so this is, you've really got to pay attention to the use of language, right? And you cannot be casual about it. Let's go immediately from there to the whole pronoun issue, okay? Because this is something I think was very, very savvy on your part.
Thank you.
That we talk about, that we're told to have pronoun hospitality, okay?
Right.
Call people by the pronouns they want. This is a simple thing. Yeah. Parents think, if I do this, maybe that will dissuade them from taking the next step. But Alvin Louie and Courage is a Habit team have a very different interpretation of what's about to happen next. So tell people, why not pronoun hospitality?
I love that. And I want to say what you just described there was, and I'm going to probably steal this from you because I love the way you talked about it. It's what we call language contamination.
Yep.
We call it language contamination, but I love the way you broke it down by saying they use the word, but they scoop out all the meaning and insert what they want.
Right.
But also with a positive connotation. I think that visual of scooping out the meaning that you think and then inserting their own, but leaving the surface level. I'm going to steal that because I think that's
a great. You got a graphic. You're going to make a graphic out of that.
I'm going to make a graphic. I'm going to put courtesy of Dr. Morris, because I love that idea of scooping that out. If you go to courageisahabit.org under tools, this one is under tools. We created something late last year, right before Christmas, called Safety and Inclusion Express.
Safety and Exclusion Express.
Okay. Inclusion Express. Yeah, safety and inclusion. Because they always say it's about safety and inclusion. Mm-hmm. So the Safety and Inclusion Express, it's the runaway transgender train. Okay. So let me talk to parents about what pronouns actually means. Okay. Instead of the pronoun hospitality, as you call it. So the transgender train is a runaway train that once your child gets in, there's no exits. There's stops along the way, but there's no exits. And you can only get on this train if you agree with everything in this cult. Okay. Now, the ticket to getting on this train are pronouns.
Right.
Okay. That's not the stop, that's a ticket. So if you as a parent, and I've seen this, and this is the scary part, Dr. Morris, if you as a parent agree or say, well, it's only a pronoun, it's only a name, it's only about manners, maybe if I'm okay with this, this nonsense will stop.
Right. Okay? Right.
If you think that, it means that you've been brainwashed because they have told you it's only a name, but it's not. If you co-sign on pronouns, parents, mom, dad, you have effectively stamped the ticket to put your child on the transgender train. Okay. This is why we said earlier, you have to brainwash the parents first. Mm-hmm. They will tell you it's just about manners. It's just about respect. It's just about making them feel included. But here's the framework. Pronouns is just a way for them to feel safe and included and seen. If you don't acknowledge that, they'll kill themselves. Is that frame? Okay. Parents go, oh, no. Okay. All right, Janie. I'll call you he. Now they're on the train because you just stamped the ticket.
Right.
So now they're on the train, and but you're not fully on board, so you're not on the train. So the train's going to take off now, and the first stop, you can still see the train, but you're getting a little smaller now.
Right.
But the first stop, it's going to be breast binding and penis tucking, changing the clothes, changing your looks, okay? But then you're not good with that. You're like, I'm not good with them binding the breasts because that's physical. There's some physical damage here. Then they're going to repeat what they told you when you first got on the train. Binding and tucking, it's only about making them feel included and safe and seen. If you don't let them do that, they're going to kill themselves.
Mm-hmm.
Now you as a parent go, oh no. All right, well, okay. The train continues to the next stop. Now you're really small. Now your parental rights are getting more separated because now you're unsafe now because you really aren't on board with this, but you're just going along with it. But they're going, your parents are unsafe. They're really not good with it.
Right.
The next stop is going to be puberty blockers and cross-sex hormones. Now you're like, I'm really not good with this. Here's where I draw the line. I'm not good with this. But guess what, parents? It's too late.
Yeah.
It's too late. You are now deemed unsafe. You're deemed abusive because they've redefined two terms, safe and abuse. Okay. You are now considered safe and abusive like a actual parents who beat their children and who starve their children. You're now the same as them because you're safe and abusive. And the schools is a safe place. The
right.
school counselors are a safe place. And I want everyone to remember this. If you redefine terms, you don't have to change the laws.
That's right. That's so true. That's a very important point. And you as the parent have receded into the background. You're getting smaller and smaller. That's a very important image.
And in a Safety and Inclusion Express, we actually have the graphic of you see the parent getting smaller and smaller. The parental rights are getting diminished.
Right.
Because once you put the child on the train.
And the child's attachment to the parent is getting smaller and smaller. It's going both directions. You know, it's the relation of the child to the state and the parent's ability to protect the child, but also the child's view of the parent as becoming less and less significant.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. It's already fractured.
Yeah.
By the time they get on cross-sex hormones, it's already completely fractured. Mm-hmm. Now, before we get to the last stop, I want to stop and I want to say here to parents what's happening in the mind of a child when they get to this, when you stamp that pronoun ticket. Most children that get wrapped up into the transgender cult have some underlying issue or more. Bulimia, anxiety, OCD. A lot of kids are over 30, 40, like almost 40% kids are autistic. Mm-hmm. That get wrapped in the transgender ideology, okay? All the kids that get wrapped up in the transgender ideology often have very low social value to begin with, meaning that they're just kind of fractured from society. So they're not used to any social value. They're not used to any kind of, they're not popular, they're not whatever it is that they, any kind of social value that they want. So when they get into this cult, they become instant celebrities. They get love bombed. And for those that don't know, love bombing, I'm sure Dr. Morris have covered that, is that overwhelming explosion of you're so brave and you're so stunning and you're perfect. And everything that you say and do now is perfect because you are now part of the transgender cult.
Mm-hmm.
I want every parent to understand that when you're that age, when you get that kind of love bomb and that kind of instant fame, that dopamine hit is so addictive that almost no child can turn away from that. And I would even say as an adult, as a full-fledged adult, if you get a little bit of fame at work or you get like a little bit of fame on social media, you know that feeling that you get, you feel great. Oh my God, I got 50 likes on that post. I don't usually get two, right?
Right.
Yeah, okay, right? Or someone go, oh my God, you look so beautiful in that dress or you look great in that suit and you never get compliments. You get that dopamine hit. And as an adult, you see how, oh man, that feels good. As a child, it is impossible to get out of it. And every step along the train, they need a higher dopamine hit. So that's why they move into the pronouns and then they go to the binding and then they go to the drugs. Because every time they make that decision and it's kept secret from the parents, the cult gives them that dopamine hit.
Right.
So
right.
You as a parent, if you put them on that train, it's almost impossible to get them out of it. It's not impossible, but it's almost impossible. It's very difficult.
That's right. And it's calculated to be
Yeah.
difficult. I mean,
That's right.
that's really the point of it. And as you mentioned, and we can't emphasize this enough, a lot of times these young people already have some kind of social issue, where they already feel excluded, and they already feel like they don't fit in and they don't know what to say and they're awkward and all this kind of stuff. That's actually kind of a normal part of
It
adolescence.
is. It
It's
is.
not completely unusual. But
Nope.
now we're telling them, oh, they'll commit suicide if you don't do what you want. If
Right.
you don't do what we want, they're going to commit suicide. Now you've raised the intensity of all of that, and really driven a really terrible wedge between the parent and the child. Finish your thought there. I keep interrupting you because I'm
No,
very
it's okay. No, you're
excited.
obviously your profession is exactly where I'm sure it's horrifying for you to see your profession become and taken over like this. And so now you're on the second to the last stop, and the last stop is going to be surgery. This is not a long train, ladies and gentlemen. This is not a long train ride.
It can
It
happen
goes
very
fast.
quickly. It
It
can happen
happens real
very
fast. Yeah,
right.
it happens super fast, and it's getting faster. And so if you as so my recommendation for parents, my is better more than recommendation, is almost like a plea. Fight it at the pronoun level. Don't use words like social transition. There's no such thing as a social transition. They're all medical transitions. Pronouns, name changes is the first step in a medical transition. There's no such thing as a social transition. We don't say that. There's no such thing as gender affirming care.
Right.
Okay. It's chemical mutilation, and it's double mastectomies and castration. There's no such thing as gender affirming care. This is pure mutilation of children. There's no such thing as social transition. It's all medical transition. And
Right.
there's no such thing as a trans child. There's no such thing as a trans child. It is child abuse. It is a social contagion. That's why
So
you see such an explosion of young people, especially girls, body image, that kind of thing.
And the
It's
social contagion is girls are particularly vulnerable to.
particularly, right?
Yeah. But there's implied in what you're saying, there's something kind of latent here, which is that part of the agenda is to separate children from their parents. So what
100%.
I'd like you to do now is to really spell out first of all, the fact that that's what's happening and why you think it's happening. Just really allow parents to see that clearly. That a separation of children from parents is willful,
It's willful,
ultimately.
right? So the organization most responsible for that is the American School Counselor Association. We call it ASCA for short, ASCA. And they have a chapter in all 50 states, so they're the largest body for the mental health for K through 12. They give the objectives, trainings, missions for social workers and counselors in K through 12. They are the largest purveyors of the transgender cult and of critical race theory. Their whole mission is to separate children from their family by deeming parents and families as unsafe and abusive. And so I had kind of touched upon that a few minutes ago about redefining the two terms, safe and abuse. Because up to this point, we all know, and everybody listening to your show knows what unsafe environment means for a child. We don't have to go and say, like, if I up to 5 years ago, if I say, hey, that child's an unsafe environment, nobody has to ask me, well, what do you mean? They pretty much figured they kind of know what that means. But today, if you burn your child with a cigarette and starve them, you're on the same level as a parent that won't succumb to a pronoun or a breast binder or puberty blockers. And so the social workers that are flooding K through 12 are working with outside agencies. The moment you as a parent don't agree with that, they're going to try to make the case that you're unsafe. And that's how you separate the children from their families. This is why in the courageisahabit.org under school counselors, every item under school counselors at the end, we have an opt-out form. And one of the things that we really impart on parents is to turn in that opt-out form and really hold the feet to the fire of your principals and superintendents and counselors to say, my child is not to meet with any mental health professional without my consent. In fact, for some parents, if you can, and not every parent can, but this is a suggestion. You don't have to do this, but it's helpful. You could even get a lawyer, and you might have to pay the 200 or 250 bucks, depending on where you're, what state you live in. You're going to have to pay that probably for the lawyer to send this opt-out form and to say, for the lawyer to go, my client, not my client as in the parent, my client as a child. Here's a tip for you, every parent. If you can muster to spend the $200 and $225 or whatever the lawyer, just you the opt-out form is there. He doesn't have to create it. All he has to do is send it to your school and say, Jane Williams is my client. She's a minor, and this is what we expect. And if they're found talking to any mental health professional, we will seek legal consequences, right?
Okay, so let me make sure I understand that though. By your strategic thinking, by saying the child is the client, is the attorney now like a guardian ad litem? Not quite, not quite
Sort
as
of.
that, but
Not at that, but they're now represented. And
they're
so
the
that holds a
children too.
bigger weight. That holds a
Yes.
bigger weight than, but again, as parents, you have rights. So obviously you can do that,
Yes.
right? But right now it's about trying to build a wall between the school counselors and social workers and children, because that's their missions and objectives. And
Right.
behind closed doors is our campaign to expose them. Just
Yes.
as a context, for people listening, last summer we went to their annual conference in July, and we grabbed all as many of the videos and training materials, PowerPoint handouts. We went to their webinars and some of their certification sessions, and we basically played all these things just of them in their natural habitat. So people say, "You're lying. We don't believe you. It's misinformation." We're like, "All right, let me just show you what they talk about behind closed doors," which is why the campaign is called Behind Closed Doors. So if anyone's listening to me going, "This is impossible. There's no way this exists in public schools," you don't have to believe me. Just go to courageisahabit.org, go into the school counselors, and look at the videos and handouts that we got from their own training. It's just them talking in their own natural habitat. This is not
Yes.
our edited video. This is all their stuff.
Yes. And I'm glad that you're talking about the school counselors. A couple of years ago, the Ruth Institute, we have a summit for survivors of the sexual revolution. And one year, the theme was the corruption of the professions,
Oh
because
yeah.
the sexual revolution wouldn't be where it is without the professions cooperating and being co-opted by this ideology. And so we had doctors, we had the pediatricians and the OBGYNs and the head of the Catholic Medical Association and so on. But we did not have any social workers and we did not have any school counselors, right? So I'm the man. And we knew, of course, that's all out there, but you can only do so much at a time. So for those of you who were present at Summit 2021 or who have watched some of those videos, please understand that what Alvin is talking about here fits right into the framework that we created there. And in fact, one of the speakers was one of the attorneys at the Children and Parental Rights Campaign. So you probably know those people because they're
I
helping
do.
parents, assert their
They're
rights.
great.
And they're another very valuable resource. I want to ask you though one thing. We're coming down kind of the home stretch of this thing, and you've got so much information here, people. We can't begin to do justice to all of it. But I want to just take this a little deeper step. And in your opinion, why do the professionals want to separate children from their parents? What's the end game for them?
And this is where people start to kind of phase out, because it sounds so impossible. Earlier, you'll notice that when I talk about this, I always put the critical race theory and the transgender ideology together. A lot of parents think they're two separate things. So the reason why communism took over China is that they were using class warfare. They're blaming the class because there's such a large disparity in class. In America, you can't use class because we have a middle class. It's a dwindling middle class, but nonetheless, our middle class still live better than most people around the world. So they have to use race and sex. Critical race theory is a Marxist ideology meant to take apart America from within. In order for you to build revolutionists, you must separate the children from their family. Now, at this point, people might start tuning out. I don't want them to tune out your show. So I'm going to stop right here. And I'm just going to say, I'm going to say for before I continue, before 2016, okay, think about where you were in 2016, 2015, 2014. Before that time, if someone came from the future in 2020, okay, just 5 years later, 4 years later, and showed you a video of Black Lives Matter destroying, burning down cities all summer long and saying the police aren't doing anything, the National Guard aren't doing anything, the FBI, nobody's doing anything. This is just happening. Every one of you in 2015 or 2016 or 2017 even would say, no, that would never happen.
Right.
Black Lives Matter was your glimpse of what they want to turn the whole country into. It's revolutionist. Now, that was a pilot program. Black Lives Matter is easy because they've already destroyed the Black community. They've told Black community for generations that they're under the thumb of white people and they need the government to save them, right? And then they destroyed fathers and men in that community. So they're an easy pilot program, okay? But they're not going to take time to destroy every Filipino and Asian and Indian and Chinese. And so they're not going to do that to every community because that takes too long. So they're going to go through the education system just like Mao did and separate the child from their families using sex and race. And they'll create revolutionists. And the entire country will be blanketed by what we saw in the summer of Black Lives Matter burning the city down. That's why they're doing it.
And what do they really want?
They want to
say, I know what they say they want. What do you think they really want?
To tear down America from within. That's a Marxist, is a Marxist takeover of America to turn to destroy our republic.
To what purpose?
Well, I think there's a lot of people who obviously don't like America for a lot of reasons. People got to remember we are an experiment. For the most of human history, there is no such thing as a constitution. There's no such thing as individual rights. That's a very new thing in America. And there's a lot of powers that be that don't want America to be successful, to be a shining beacon for freedom, to invite people over like my great-grandfather to say, if you're facing persecution, we have a place for you so that your family can succeed. They don't want that. They don't want a place where you can make it on your own based on your own merit and your hard work. Mm-hmm. This is why equity is drilled into children. Right.
And equity means something different than it meant to your grandpa, your great grandpa. When they say equity, equity has a valid meaning, but they've put something else into that meaning.
Sure. Well, it's supposed to be equality, but of course they
correct. They know, correct. Right. Correct.
And so that's the purpose, is to create revolutionists.
Yeah. What I'm getting at, though, the way I look at it, because I came at this, I've come at this from a number of different angles. You know,
sure.
My background, I don't know if you know this, Alvin, my background is in economics. My doctorate's actually in economics. And I taught free market economics for years.
Wow, okay.
Okay, and so, you know, I knew all along communism was a bad thing. But sure. It took a while to figure out that the sexual revolution was also a bad thing, because the sexual revolution is all wrapped up in freedom. And you get to do whatever you want. But bottom line, once you get to do whatever you want, and you've made a mess of your life, and you're a complete radical individualist,
right.
Comes in and takes over and is more powerful than ever.
That's right.
The way I digest this, you know, the way I boil all this down, I want to see what you think about it, is that the ideologies, whatever their label may be and whatever their stated goal may be, the ideology is a cover for a power grab. I mean, at its base, there's nothing more noble than that. It's a power grab, and the issue is never the issue. Helping poor people isn't the issue. Helping Black
never
people
yeah
isn't the issue. The issue is never the issue. The revolution is the issue.
That's right.
And the point of the revolution is power.
That's right.
That's always the power. And so in that environment, whether you're promoting class warfare or race warfare or anything in between, or sexual warfare, you know, battle of the sexes, whatever you're separating kids from their parents is a basic thing that has to be done, the content of the power grab might be.
That's right. It has to be. You're absolutely right. Regardless of the power grab, regardless of whatever the agenda is, there's the one thing they always share in common. You must separate the parents from their children or children from their parents. Has to be.
Because
if you don't, you don't have a revolution, because every parent, even parents who aren't, now, again, not the ones who are abusive, we have programs for that. That's why we have programs in place to help move the parent, move the children from actual abusive. But even parents who you and I might go, you know, they're not great parents, still love their kids. And you know what? Kids still love their parents. Kids still love their parents. They, their friend might be, might have a mom that bakes cookies and, you know, makes organic food, or their father might take them out to throw the ball every night. But you know what? If your parents aren't perfect, you still love your parents because they're your parents. And that's the beauty of children. That's the most beautiful thing about children, is that they forgive us for all the mistakes that we make every day, because they still love their parents. And for schools, for a government entity to separate that, to say you're not a safe parent because we know better, that should anger every person, whether you're a Democrat or a Republican.
Yes, yes. And you know, in Catholic theology, there's this idea that John Paul II came up with, or that he described, and it's not unique to him, but he really, you know, promoted it a lot. And that's the idea that the family is the school of love. This is where you learn how to love. If you didn't know, because, you know, we're naturally selfish, really. You know, and when we go through adolescence and we're sowing our wild oats and showing how independent we are and everything, kind of, we can forget about how to love. But when we're little babies, we know all about it. When we're parents, we know all about it, you know. And so the family is really meant to cultivate that ability to love, because that's who the human person really is. And that's what Christianity teaches, is that what it means to be human is not to be a radical individual. What it means to be human is to love and be loved. That's the essence of humanity, you know? And and so that's at stake in all of these ideologies. You know, when you think about it, somewhere along the line, these ideologies have a bad guy that they scapegoat. If we could just get rid of those bad guys, everything would be fine.
Yeah, always the bad, always a scapegoat,
Right, there's always a scapegoat, because their fantasy world can never be. Right. You're never going to have a classless society. You know, the nomenclatura were certainly a class, So the details of the fantasy are not the important point. The important point is that they're trying to promote something that cannot be. And they're brainwashing you into going along with it.
That's right.
And then you write them a blank check.
And your blank check is your children. And that's your blank check.
And your children. Yeah, you're signing your children.
That's your giving. That's who you're. That your blank check is you giving them your children.
Right. In this environment, that's the way it works. Right. And but you know, these people, they excuse themselves from the beginning. You know, when they start off on their crusade, you know, we have to break a few eggs to make an omelet. Right. Mm-hmm. Well, so, you know, what was Lenin really saying? He was saying, I'm willing to pay the price. Any moral price is excusable in the name of the revolution. That's right. All of them think like that, you know,
and they all think like that.
Yeah, they all think like that. And Christianity always says, no, you're not allowed to do that. The ends don't justify the means. You know, it's better to endure evil than to do evil. You know, that's completely at odds with what these guys are doing, so the two things they always go after, they always go after family.
Yes.
They always go after the church. They're always after.
Always. Has to. Yeah. Because if you take out faith, any faith, doesn't matter what your faith is. If you take out faith, you take out family, the children are left completely defenseless.
That's right.
And it's always for this kind of means. And you know, and I think this is going to be a fight that we're going to, long after we're gone.
Yeah.
That's going to be a fight for another country, another time. And each generation needs to be able to stand up as hard as it is. Because if you don't, that's going to be the generation that loses your freedom, and your kids are going to be the ones paying for it.
That's exactly right. And as you said, I liked what you said, that there's no place to run. There's no place to go anymore. You know, and so the people who think we're going to do the Benedict option and we're going to go, you know, build our little faith community in the brick, they're not going to leave you alone, people.
No, they won't leave you alone. They won't leave you alone.
You are, they're going to come after you, you know. Every small town in America, they care what's in the library. You know, when the people go and say, we don't like these books in our library, and it's some little burg in Texas, you know, the human rights campaign zooms in and sends their people in there to yell at people in a little burg in Texas, you know.
That's right. There's no,
if they care, you need to care.
That's right. Well, I think we have a little, I have a little tagline on my link tree. You may not care about politics, but politics care about your children.
Yeah, that's right. That's exactly right. Tell us another of your favorite resources that people can use. And by the way, when you tell people they can use these resources, you go, what exactly do you mean? You go and you download them, and then you do what with them?
It depends on what it is. Some of them you can print out and take them to a school board. Some of them, a school board meeting, hand them out, use them as a speaking guide. Some of it, you can talk to other parents with it to understand what's going on, bring it to your principal and saying, hey, this is what's happening. Here's my, you know, it's edgy. It's giving parents the competence to be able to speak up. It's competence, not confidence, it's competence. Because once you have competence, you'll naturally have confidence, right?
Correct. Correct.
So you
That's
can
right.
download them, you can link them, you can put them on your website, you can share them on Facebook. We encourage you to share them far and wide, right? This is it's there for you to print, share, mail, post, whatever you want. That's it's made as a it's made to be mobile. It's made to be quickly used, okay? I will say one thing, if this is in the last tool I want to, you know, in the time that we have here, CourageIsAHabit.org, school counselors. Under that tab, there is something that we came up with again late last year called Stranger Danger. And actually, now that I think about it, that might have been the last release for 2022. Stranger Danger is five strategies that any family can use and modify based on their own family values and the age of the children. And it's based on a premise that all good parents, all of us have done when our children were little. When they get to be, not when they're like, you know, 6 months or a year or two, but when they get to the point where they're kind of walking around, you know, and they're going out with you a lot, we always tell them when they were little, if somebody approaches you with a candy or a puppy and saying, hey, you know, your mom told me to come get you, Dr. Morse, what do we tell them?
Don't go with them. Go find your mom
That's right. Don't
and
go with
tell your
them
mom. And if
or go.
somebody tells you, this is our little secret, don't tell, that's exactly when you tell your mom.
That's exactly when you tell your mom, or you go find someone that works, you know, that works at department store and go, I lost my mom or whatever, right? We tell them these things, right? If someone grabs you at a department store and tries to take you out, what do you do? You scream and you claw and you scream, this is not my daddy. This is not, right? We tell them this, not because we think that's really going to happen to them, but it might happen to them,
Right,
right? So we
right.
don't say, well, we don't want to scare them. No, because we know as adults, we prepare them for that small percentage, because if we didn't prepare them and on a 1% chance that happened to them, they don't know how to defend themselves.
Right.
But for some reason, when they got older and now the schools are doing the indoctrination through the counselors and the social workers and some teachers, we forgot the idea of stranger danger. Now, here is not a 1% chance someone's going to grab them out of a department store. This is a high percentage chance. There's like an 80% chance, 90% chance that
Right.
they're going to get this indoctrination when they go to school.
Right.
But we don't tell kids how to defend themselves. When a counselor tells you, don't tell your parents, you go tell your parents. When they ask you about your family life, your things that you shouldn't be talking to other people about other than your mom and dad, we go, you know what? I don't feel comfortable talking about this. Call my mom.
Yeah.
Why do parents not deploy that stranger danger that we naturally did when they were little? So stranger danger is the tool for parents to read through. We give you five strategies that you can modify based on the age of the child and your own family dynamics and your own family values. And hopefully that starts some ideas for you. It's not just the five. Certainly there's a lot of other ideas, but we wanted to give parents something to start with so that they can not only fight for their children, but also teach your children to defend themselves.
Now, does Courage is a Habit, do you have chapters or groups that meet or anything like this or not? Do you have an organizational structure like that?
No, we don't have chapters, and that's on purpose. We're not, and I'm not to say that we won't forever do it, but right now we work through really great organizations like Parents Defending Education and Moms for Liberty and Heritage and so many other ones, the Family Research Center, and then hopefully now through you guys, we wanted to be able to, you know, use that as distribution to be able to reach people, because all these organizations have done really wonderful work. And so I look at us as almost like a weapons manufacturer. Because all these, everybody else do really good work of talking about things, but like you said, they don't often sometimes give tools for parents to be able to actually take action. And so we just, you know, we work through different avenues. And the other thing that we do that we started to do last year was work in specific states. So that means that certain states will bring us in, and we will spend time with a selected couple of school districts, and we teach parents in that district how to fight. And so we actually now at that point, we do have meetings, and we go down and give trainings, and we do events, and we really work with them. Like, we really hold their hand with the idea that if we model it on these couple of school districts, that they can go off and train other school districts in that state, and then we move on to another state.
And
So
so who would be inviting you? Would this be an already existing group within that state?
generally speaking, so far it would be an existing group.
Okay.
Some of them are pretty small and some of them are mid-size. Nobody's super big, right? It's just that they have an existing group, but they're like, okay, well, we've got together. We know there's a problem, but now what?
Right.
It's so big, right? What do we do? How do we, now that we've gotten to the point where we go, okay, we know this is a really big problem and it's really bad, but what do we do? And so we come in and kind of show them what's the next level of staying on offense. And so we do that. We go into different states to do that when people bring us in. And that's something that if you're interested, anybody listening in your state or your specific school district, just drop us an email at team, just a TEAM, team at courageisahabit.org, team at courageisahabit.org, and give us a little context as to where you are and that you're interested in bringing us in for X amount of time, and we'll give you a call and we'll talk about logistics.
And do you accept donations from the public?
We absolutely do. In fact, as a nonprofit, we work off small, mid-sized donations,
Right.
and all the every support goes right back to our fight. Because the things that we create, it's so that you don't have to spend hundreds and thousands of hours digging through it,
That's
because
right.
we do. So
That's right.
it's if you hit courageisahabit.org, you can hit the Courageous Supporters little button, or just go to donate.courageisahabit.org. That's donate.courageisahabit.org, and every dollar counts. It goes right back into our fight. As much as I would love to be sailing on yachts and having $500 dinners, that's not what we're doing. It's not a very glamorous thing. We work, my
Right.
team works 6 days a week. We work all hours of the day because there's so much to dig through, and it's a hard fight, but it's a meaningful fight, because we feel that no matter what we do, if we lose the hearts and minds of our young children, it's all lost anyway. So any
Right.
support you give us, it's really, really appreciated. And I assure you, my team is very, very grateful for any support.
Well, Alan Louie, this has really been a very fascinating conversation. And Ruthies, listen up. You want to follow Courage as a Habit? Look at these resources that he's got and give us your feedback. If this was meaningful for you,
Please.
if this was helpful for you, put comments in our in the comments below, and share this video with your friends and family. And by all means, introduce Alan Louie to your friends and family. Alvin, thank you so much for being my guest on today's episode of the Dr. J Show.
Dr. Morris, you are so wonderful. Thank you so much for having me. It's a
You're
pleasure.
very welcome.